Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, a Cubs-centric podcast from Good Karma Brands as well as ESPN 1000 and brought to you by Arlington Toyota. Wherever you are listening, I welcome you once again to our debut episode, what I hope will be a long-running podcast or video cast if you're watching on YouTube. Of course, you can find us on the ESPN Chicago app. We're going to take your comments, your questions. Leave them at our YouTube page or tweet my producer of this great podcast, Jack McGrath. Jack, where can they find you?
They can find me at JackMcGrath1000 on Twitter.
I'm coming at you as a reporter. I want to take you inside, hence the name, The Friendly Confines, inside the locker room. You'll hear from the players, the coaches, the front office. I intend to get them on this podcast as well. We'll do that in due course. First, we have to figure out what's going on with this team struggling right now as they start a road series. We're taping this podcast, our debut episode, on Tuesday before the team takes on the Colorado Rockies. So we'll have different segments, different guests, and obviously react to everything that's going on a day-to-day basis, dropping this podcast twice weekly. Inside the Friendly Confines. Tell your friends, tell your family about it, and hopefully you'll enjoy the ride. This team certainly has given us a lot to talk about. Let's go with the first pitch. How did we get here? How the heck did the Cubs end up just a couple games above 500 here as we head to mid-June, 8 games behind the Milwaukee Brewers after getting off to such a great start at 27-12, first place? Everything going well offensively. Yeah, they had a pitching injury with Cade Horton, but there were enough things going right on the mound that you figured, okay, they'll overcome that injury and at least be in the race. That's not happening right now. Certainly, they're still in contention, but not the way they were a month ago. They've dropped over 10 games in just a month's time. You know, Jack, I can understand what's going on the mound a lot easier than what's happening at the plate. I think most people can. Losing Cade Horton, losing Matthew Boyd, losing Justin Steele longer than people thought has maybe caught up with them. I sort of can understand that. They were overcoming those issues earlier because of their offense, but now it's caught up with them a little bit. Their starter's ERA is down near the bottom of the league. Maybe some unexpectedly poor performances by Jameson Taillon. But that's offset by getting an unexpected good start to Ben Brown's season, for example. You had Shota Imanaga, good, and then more, you know, kind of bad recently. And then the bullpen's kind of been up and down. I certainly wouldn't blame the bullpen for their pitching woes when you talk about a starter's ERA down at the bottom. But, like, those struggles kind of make sense to me. Shouldn't be this bad. But how do you lose your top two starters and overcome it? It's not easy. Maybe some other teams have done it better, certainly, but I sort of get it.
It's essentially been the top three, too, Jesse, because Matthew Boyd's been hurt for the past 3 weeks as well. So you're missing Steele, you're missing Horton, you're missing Boyd, you missed Edward Cabrera for a bit, not that he's been great anyways, but you've been missing a significant part of your rotation for most of the season. And so that's explainable to me. What's unexplainable to me is how the offense has faltered.
Yeah, the real head scratcher is the offense over the last month or so. And it's really hard to get your head around it. How can you be that good and that bad? And I think there's something in their DNA that might explain it a little bit. And it has to do with being undersized, not having the home run to fall back on. You might say, well, Jesse, the Milwaukee Brewers don't hit home runs and they're first in the league in scoring. That just might be an identity thing. They know exactly who they are, and they have to lean into it. You know, I thought the Cubs were going to be deep back in February and March, and they proved to be so in April when Craig Counsell could basically point to anybody on that bench and they'd have success. You had a righty on the mound. Here comes Conforto from the left side to give a good pinch hit. You got a lefty on the mound. Here comes Matt Shaw off the bench to give a good pinch hit, or Carson Kelly or Miguel Amaya. It all was working out, and you had enough guys hot in the lineup that they could really pass the baton to the next guy. Then it seemingly dried up. And I think therein lies the problem. A deep lineup is great, but it also needs six or seven guys going well at the same time. We saw this in the comeback against the A's the other day. They had, what, seven hits in the ninth inning? It was great. But how often are you going to get seven hits in an inning? Somewhere along the way, you need a home run or two. Now, Ian Happ has hit home runs. PCA lately has hit home runs. But it's not a home run hitting team. It's a bunch of hitters that can hit home runs. There's a difference there. And I do think it's an undersized team that kind of can't fall back on the home run when it's needed. There's no Schwarber there. There's no Otani there. There's no Judge there. I've spoken about this on the radio many times. And the one guy that probably is, you talk to the players themselves, that puts on a show during BP that's physically stronger than anyone else is Seiya Suzuki, and he's just not hitting enough for power so far this year. As much as you talk about Alex Bregman and Dansby Swanson, Seiya Suzuki is right there in the middle of guys that have struggled so far. So as much as it was going six or seven or eight guys hot at the same time in April, the opposite has happened here, and there's no fallback with the long ball. And I do think that's how this team has been built, and that is something that Jed Hoyer is going to have to look in the mirror about over time if they continue to kind of sputter like this. Where, yeah, once in a while, they get enough hits in an inning, but there's just not enough slug there. And we're going to get into why that is as we move along here.
Jesse, why does that work for the Brewers and not the Cubs? Because you mentioned that the Brewers have the top offense in baseball right now, but they don't hit the home run ball at a very high clip. So why is that working for the Milwaukee Brewers, but not working for the Chicago Cubs?
It's really the million-dollar question, Jack. It really is. It might be an identity thing, and that might apply to the entire Milwaukee organization as we all kind of admire what they've done up there. They know exactly who they are, and they lean into it. This one I'm talking about, sort of a Cubs lineup that's a little bit in between a full contact lineup, which you might describe in Milwaukee, and a power lineup, which you might describe as the Philadelphia Phillies. They're somewhere in between, and look, at their best, they're a little bit of both. And maybe that's what we saw in April. There was some home runs scattered in there with a lot of contact and the whole passing the baton idea. But it has some inherent warts to it if you're built that way without true slug in the middle. And the warts probably have to do with the day and age of that we're in baseball. We're stringing together a bunch of hits is a rarity. It's a rarity for any team outside of the Milwaukee Brewers. They just have it in their DNA. The Cubs' DNA has a little mix of contact, speed, and power, but maybe not enough of one of those things.
So are you saying the Cubs don't have an identity right now? Or is their identity just a mix? Or are you saying they don't have an identity?
Identity is such a weird, ambiguous word. Is it even necessary? But it's a way to describe something that is either lacking because they don't have it or something that you see and feel every day. Using Milwaukee as an example, you kind of see it. You know what their identity is. You're not exactly sure with the Cubs. So this is something I think they've got to figure out over there. I'm not sure it's a hitting coach thing or anything like that. I think it's how you're built and what's in your DNA as a team. So I think that the offense is going to continue to confound us in a lot of ways. I do think, and I'm not just saying this because it's my debut episode I'm on today, I do think this is a very interesting and important week offensively. You're going to Colorado. The Brewers were built to score runs in Colorado, and they did this past weekend. The Cubs, at their best, as we were saying, are that hand the baton off type of team. This should be a ballpark they succeed in, because it's not about home runs in Colorado. It's about finding the gaps. It's a doubles. It's triples. It's a lot of hits. The Cubs better get healthy in Colorado, because if they don't, I'm not sure when they will. And frankly, San Francisco, you think it's a pitcher's park, and it is. But if you're going to right center with the ball, you're gonna find some slug there. You're gonna find some extra base hits to the right side. And boy, does Alex Bregman need to go to the right side. Boy, does Dansby Swanson need to go to the right side. If they have a bad week offensively, they may have to make some drastic decisions with this team. And I don't even know what that means to be. I don't know what that looks like, to be honest. But I do think it's a big week for this offense, coming off a day off on Monday, coming off some off days for Dansby Swanson. Alex Bregman says he's working harder than he ever has, that he thinks he's close. Well, all of that has to come to fruition starting in Colorado.
Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
So every week I want to take you inside the clubhouse to analyze what they're saying about the team, good or bad. It's been more bad lately. And today I want to give you a couple of Jed Hoyer clips. I was talking last segment about this offense and how it's built, and I just have a little disagreement about a home run hitting team or a team full of decent hitters who hit home runs. Here's Jed Hoyer recently.
As you look at the nature of your offense, do you feel like, you know, not having a Kurtz, not having a true slugger in the middle really reduces your margin for error? You have good hitters that hit home runs, but I'm not sure you have a home run hitter or two even in that lineup.
I don't know. Michael Busch had 34 homers last year. Pete hit over 30. Say hit over 30. You know, Ian Dansby were in the 20s. You know, Bregman should be hitting homers. Like, our guys that hit homers are not hitting homers, and I think that is ultimately the challenge, you know? There's no doubt. I mean, watching Nick Kurtz in that series, like, that is a superstar middle-of-the-order bat, and every time he's at the plate, you know, if you're a fan, you can't look away, and if you're me, you're looking away. You're hoping for a good result, you know? I don't think we have that kind of middle-of-the-order slugger. There's not a lot of those guys out there, you know, frankly. We have one of the deepest and best offenses in baseball, period, when we're playing well.
So let's examine what Hoyer said right there. Because at first, he talks about his team's ability to hit home runs, reeling off guys that hit 30-plus last year. But then, towards the end, admires having a guy like Nick Kurtz in the lineup, which the A's have, a big, strong dude. He says those guys aren't always available, yet they do come on the market. Shohei Ohtani was on the market in recent years. Aaron Judge was on the market in recent years. Kyle Schwarber has been on the market a couple times since the Cubs let him go. Most recently, this offseason as well. So there is an ability to add a big home run hitting dude in your lineup if you want to pay for it. You can also draft them. White Sox have drafted a couple, Colson Montgomery being one. Jacob Gonzalez is a bigger dude. And the White Sox just signed one in Munetaka Murakami as well. So he admits it's great to have them, but says can't always find them. Okay. The other angle is what he said about the home run hitters. He mentioned two or three guys that hit 30-plus home runs last year. But my point of saying they're not home run hitters, they're good hitters that hit home runs, is that there's volatility in them. How many guys hit 30-plus home runs in 2024? Zero. How many guys hit 30-plus home runs in 2023? Zero. There's this volatility in their DNA. So Michael Busch might hit 30 again, but he also might hit 15 one year. and then he might jump up to 24 and then down to 19. Kyle Schwarber's worst years are going to be in the 30s. Same with the other sluggers that I'm talking about. So yes, they have the ability, but what happens in a given year if a bunch of guys who are not big and strong, who aren't normally hitting home runs on a regular basis, what if they all have one of those depressed years when it comes to power? We might be seeing it right now outside of Ian Happ. And now PCA has been on a little bit of a run. So this is what I'm talking about. I talk often on the radio about undersized players in baseball. The Cubs are undersized. Doesn't mean they can't win, but you have a bigger margin for error when you have a big slugger or two in the lineup, as hard as they are to find. Second clip from Jed Hoyer is about the trade deadline. Give this a listen.
I mean, I think your World Series odds are probably going to be correlated to your odds of getting a bye. And I think that getting a bye is such a big deal. It's effectively, not only are you winning one round by getting a bye, but you're also, by getting a bye, you, in theory, you're playing an opponent that should be in a lesser state. You know, I mean, Brewers got a bye last year, and my boy threw on 3 days rest. I mean, I think that's so the bye is that important. So, you know, World Series odds are obviously on true talent, but also like whether you get a bye or not, it's going to make a big difference. So I think that you want to look at it differently. I'd say, you know, the aggressiveness, a lot of it is based on like the ability to get a bye.
So I actually agree with Hoyer on that point. I don't think the trade deadline should be your savior. I don't think it's the thing that should bail you out with no guarantee that it will. I don't think the Cubs should trade for Scooble in the position they're in. Now, I understand it's counterintuitive. The worse position you're in, the more you need an ace, right? But I'm not sacrificing the future and actually letting my front office off the hook by crossing my fingers that Scooble is going to take you from 2 games over .500 to 12 games or 15 over .500, which he can't do by himself, though obviously getting good players might impact players around you. In 2016, the Cubs were in first place. We knew they were going to the postseason. They had a good closer in Hector Rondon, and yet they traded their top prospect for Aroldis Chapman. That's when you make the bold move. That's what he's talking about when it comes to World Series odds. When you have a true chance to win the World Series, you go for it. You sacrifice your near-term future for a big name. When that big name only increases your odds by a few percentage points, you don't do it. You don't do it. As much as you're desperate and you need it, you don't do it. I actually agree with him on that point, but he's the one that kind of made this bed, so he's got to sleep in it. So I don't feel like he should try to bail himself out of a bad situation by mortgaging the future for 2 months of Tarek Skubal. So it's, again, counterintuitive, but I actually agree with him on this point. The trade deadline is overblown. Yes, obviously acquiring players like that can have an impact. In fact, relievers have the biggest impact. That's why you see so many good ones get moved. They can impact playoff games every single night. We've seen guys pitch in all 7 games of the World Series. That actually has the biggest impact on your team. A good bat, maybe he gets hot, maybe he doesn't. He only gets 4 chances a game to impact you. So it's like, don't act like the trade deadline is your savior. That's the biggest thing that I can impart to you about August 3rd. That's the deadline this year. We're way away from it, so a lot of time between now and then to figure out what this team needs and what they'll do. But the worse you are, the less big you go. That's kind of my feeling on it.
Yep, come on.
Time for the first ever Inside the Friendly Confines mailbag. I'm sure these questions will be very rational and without emotion, considering what's going on with the team. Let's go over to Jack McGrath, where He'll tell you where you can leave a question.
Well, I've got Twitter pulled up right now on my phone where you can leave questions at Jack McGrath 1000. Also, on this episode or any episodes, just leave a question for Jesse in the comments, and I'll go through all the comments and I'll ask the questions to Jesse in our mailbag. I'll ask the best questions to Jesse. I'm not going to ask every question. We might get too many, but I'll ask the best questions to Jesse. And speaking of rational, I've got one for you right away, Jesse. This one's from Ricky. Remember, you answered this question as zero previously on Twitter. But he asks, 0 to 100 chance Jed or Craig gets fired if this continues.
I mean, of course, there's always a number that you get to. You know, 10 games under, 20 games under. I mean, there's always a number. But within reason, if they continue to struggle, I think it's a very, very small chance. They're both under contract for a long time. We have a labor issue coming up that's going to muddy the waters when it comes to baseball. I don't think Tom Ricketts wants to add another layer of unsureness. If that's
uncertainty,
the right word, uncertainty to his situation with this team right now. Obviously, there's always a number, as I said before. But I would put it at highly, highly doubtful, under 10%.
Ron asks, does Alex Bregman have a personal hitting coach?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he does. And he's at every homestand. I've talked to him often. They're working hard. I've never seen someone work as hard as Bregman has. I mean, he flies up this guy every homestand. They video every BP. They're diving into numbers. Maybe it's too much work. That's the other end of it when it comes to hitters. Sometimes you put in too much work, and you just need to read and react. But this is how he's always gotten out of slumps before. So, yes, he has a personal hitting coach. He's on the field. He's with Bregman the whole way. The team approves of it. Every player has his own. Not many bring them to Wrigley Field for every homestand. There might be a point where Bregman says, hey, stay home. I'm not looking at any stats, analytics, video, or anything. I'm just going to read and react. That's not been Bregman's way in the past. But let's see. They told me he's getting close. They've also told me that sometimes there's a step back to go forward. Unfortunately, it's happening as they're losing games. He kind of would love all that work to have been done in spring training. That wasn't the case. So let's see if a step back eventually leads to a step forward. But the answer to the question is, yes, he does.
This one comes off of that question a little bit. Clint asks, Jesse, can you hit with runners in scoring position? And if so, how long until you can get activated and on the roster?
I mean, let's say his average 125 or something with runners in scoring position. I might be able to get to 100, maybe, if I close my eyes. It's baffling. It really is. And that's why Jed Hoyer, Craig Council, and the rest of the group over there just believe it'll change. It's so, so extreme right now in a bad way that positive regression is due. That's what they have to hope for. Council did mention there are outlier seasons that never find that regression in a good way or a bad way, and you just end up with what you have. They're hoping that that's not this year, especially since they did have it pretty good for a month. Now it's been a little bit longer than a month, but there's been bad, there's been good. They're hoping it gets back to good again.
Username Senator Darwin asks, who's to blame for this mess?
How long's this podcast, Jack?
Yeah. This will be our last one. So.
You know what's funny? For once, I think we can all kind of agree, at least in the micro, this isn't on ownership. Tom Ricketts approved enough payroll this year to win in the NL Central. Probably has the last few years. But they're going to pay the luxury tax. I think that's always a question. If you're not willing to pay the luxury tax, are you really committed? Well, they're willing to pay it. They're not going to spend as much as New York or LA. Okay. But enough to compete in the NL Central, yes. So for once, we probably can't look at ownership, right? He approved Alex Bregman's contract, the extensions with Horner and PCA, et cetera, et cetera. So now you go down the ladder. There's enough blame to go around. Players, the manager is ultimately the guy, right? It's a result-oriented business. If the results aren't there, it is on Craig Council. He knows that. But if you really are forcing me to choose. You kind of, if you've listened to this podcast so far, know where I'm going with it. Jed chose Alex Bregman. He chose Alex Bregman with a Gold Glover at third base. Gold Glove candidate, you know, finalist at third base, who was one of their better hitters in the second half. He chose to spend the money on Alex Bregman. Now, the Bregman story is not written yet, but you can't take back the first 2 months. And in his words, how much he's contributed, paraphrasing here, to their struggles. If he comes through a little bit more, they win a few more games. But the story's not completely written. But again, he chose Alex Bregman. He sat Matt Shaw. He chose the pitchers in the draft who have gotten hurt again in Cade Horton and Justin Steele, both of whom had injuries before they came to the Cubs. He chose a more undersized team, as I've been mentioning on this podcast. The decisions Jed Hoyer made, to me, have led them more to this point than anything else. And if you don't like Craig Counsell, we can always say, Jed Hoyer hired Craig Counsell. Like, that's where, you know, it can trickle up, it can trickle down. But if you really want to get to the nitty-gritty, Jed Hoyer made a bunch of decisions. I mean, just this past offseason, in Alex Bregman, in Edward Cabrera, in Hunter Harvey, in Phil Maton, that just haven't worked out. Now, it's everywhere, though. I mean, are the coaches coaching up these players right? I mean, I don't know. How do you just, that's not something we can measure. The only thing we can measure are the results. Is Craig Counsell saying the right things to each and every player? I don't know. All we can measure are the results. I talk to players. I've talked to players that applaud Craig Counsell even after they've left. I've talked to former pitchers who say Craig Counsell was the best at managing their health, which might explain why against the White Sox, he didn't pitch Palencia 2 innings and then didn't need him against the Brewers when they got swept, which might explain why Ben Brown was pulled the other day under 90 pitches and immediately the reliever gave up the home run. He takes care of pitcher's health, which should eventually help the team as well if you've got healthy pitchers down the stretch and in the playoffs. But is it Craig Counsell's fault that Phil Maton's not pitching well? Is it Tommy Hodgson's fault? Maybe, but I can't prove that. But I can say that the front office chose these players. And frankly, I've been wrong about, in a big way, two reporting things in the last decade, in my opinion, that I put on myself. I did not think the Cubs would sign Craig Kimbrell, and I ignored any sort of smoke I heard about it. I just didn't think they were going to do it. That was a decade ago, almost. I also did not truly believe they would sign Alex Bregman. I ignored the smoke there as well. I knew they talked to him. They talked to him at the winter meetings. First, I didn't think they'd meet his price tag, especially considering they had a Gold Glove finalist at third who was improving on offense. Now, Matt Shaw is no Alex Bregman when it comes to the resume. But Matt Shaw was cheap labor where maybe you could take the money and invest it into a position or two that was more needy. They didn't do that. Jed Hoyer really liked Alex Bregman for a lot of reasons. I like Alex Bregman for a lot of reasons. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, that's going to be on Jed Hoyer. Certainly not Craig Counsell or the hitting coaches. There's nobody more self, as you just asked me about his hitting coach, there's nobody more self-aware of his issues or whatever than Alex Bregman. So if he fails, it's on him. If he succeeds, it's on him and nobody else. So you're asking me if I had to choose one person? Jed Hoyer chose these players and put together this team the way he wanted. So to me, it's on him as much as anyone else. Okay, that's going to do it for our debut edition of Inside the Friendly Confines. Make sure you like and subscribe and tell your friends and family about it. We'll drop 2 a week, so make sure you check out our second episode later this week. And, of course, leave your questions for my producer, Jack McGrath. I will answer them on every podcast. And soon enough, we'll talk to some movers and shakers over at Wrigley Field. I'm going to talk to diehard fans like Mark Silverman and David Kaplan, hosts on ESPN 1000. We'll go in a lot of directions for this podcast. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Hopefully the Cubs bring you some happy days in the near future. So long.